Hello, this is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1355 features three classic stories by Life Rattle writer Raj Pabla. Raj Pabla was born the third of four children in Toronto in 1982. The Pabla family moved to Brampton, where Raj completed her high school before starting at the University of Toronto. She completed her first year at the downtown campus, then switched to the Mississauga campus for her subsequent 3 years, then went on to medical school. On this month's classic show, Pabla continues her six-week family visit to India, where her parents were born. Our narrator observes, from a position of privilege, the diversity and inequality of the homeland with humor and compassion. Then back to Canada and the McJob that brings her smack back to the harsh realities here at home. Let's listen now as Raj Pabla reads her first story on Life Rattle. And please be advised that many of the stories aired on Life Rattle contain language and situations that some people may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised. You're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Canada.
A Long Drive by Raj Pabla. A peacock on the roof of our house cooed. Its feathers swayed in the hot late-day breeze. The sun's rays streamed through the luscious green leaves of our mango tree, and the shadows under the tree dappled the red brick driveway. "The drivers are here," my older sister Jazz said. "Let's go." My brother Gisharn and my older cousin Baji loaded our bags into the back of the white Tempo Traveler van. Mom, Dad, Gisharn, Jazz, and Paji got into the van. Mom lay down on the back bench seat. The back bench seat converted into a bed. "See you in a few weeks," I said to Dinesh, my year-old nephew. I kissed his forehead and pinched his cheeks. A faint early evening moon peeked from behind puffy white clouds. I sat in my favorite seat behind the driver. I had to get used to the driver's seat being on the wrong side of the van and traffic being on the wrong side of the road. The Tempo Traveler's engine roared and the van lurched forward onto Railway Road. Rinku, the guy the driver had hired to keep the car clean and safe from thieves, sat in the passenger seat up front. It would take 2.5 days of driving southbound from our home in North Punjab to get to Nanded, Maharashtra, near Bombay. "Guys, wake up," Dad said. "We are in New Delhi. There are lots of temples to see here." I rubbed my eyes and yawned. My legs tingled and a prickling sensation swept my feet. I pushed the black button on my sports watch. 4:02 a.m. glowed on the blue background. During the early morning hours, we visited four temples in the Connaught Place district of India's capital. For our last stop, we visited Sis Ganj, the historical Sikh temple where the Mughals had tortured and beheaded the ninth Guru in the 17th century. Inside the Gurdwara, morning prayers echoed in the Grand Diwan Hall. Golden brown topaz pieces cut in diamond shapes framed the tops of the arches over every doorway leading into the main hall. "The arches are an influence of 17th century Mughal architecture," Dad said. Reflections bounced off of tiny mirrors fitted onto the rear wall of the Diwan Hall. A life-size 17th century oil painting of the ninth Guru, Guru Tegh Bahadur, covered the front wall. A white marble balcony circled the room. Gisharn videotaped the Gurdwara. At 6 a.m., we returned to the Tempo Traveler van in the underground parking lot. We still had 2 days of driving left. The van pulled out of the lot and onto the busy New Delhi streets. On the city streets, donkeys wandered everywhere. Donkeys had no value in this part of India. Milkmen lugged tall steel canisters strapped onto their bikes. Tractors weighed down with hay crawled along the road. Auto rickshaws honked horns and passed the tractors and milkmen in the oncoming lane. Mopeds, horse carts, cars, and pedestrians choked the inner city roads. Outside the city boundaries, the Tempo Traveler van swerved onto the GT Road. The GT Road, an interstate road, would take us straight to Nanded, Maharashtra. The early morning sun crept higher and higher and higher over the road, weaving through the cornfields. Birch trees lined the GT Road, and the sun's golden rays crept through the rustling leaves and shadows danced on the road. In the distance, a farmer weeded his farm. Water gushed out of tube wells and overflowed into small irrigation channels and into the fields. The tall green corn stalks swayed in the breeze. A green overhead sign in Hindi read, Madhya Pradesh, 5 kilometers. I opened my window and let the cool morning air hit my face. The smell of burning wood filled my nostrils. I liked the smell. Rinku belonged to the low caste of barbers. He watched me through the left side mirror. His dark eyes concentrated on me. His greasy black hair glistened, and his baby blue half-sleeved shirt hung from his skeletal figure. He slid the silver band on his long, bony middle finger up and down, up and down. The Tempo Traveler grinded to a halt near the Madhya Pradesh border. Cars, vans, trucks, and motorbikes waited to pass the toll booth. Angry horns honked, and impatient drivers waved fists out of their windows. The palpable, hot, humid air stifled us. I felt sticky. I wanted to start moving again, and I wanted to feel the breeze again. The driver pulled up to the toll booth. "Hello, Saab," the officer said to the driver. "Where are you coming from?" "New Delhi." "You are an out-of-state car, Saab. It's going to be 200 rupees. "All right, no problem." Without paying the toll, the driver stepped on the accelerator and sped away from the toll booth and steered the Tempo Traveler onto the GT Road. We laughed. "Only in India can you get away without paying like that," Jazz said. "That was too funny." We drove at 30 kilometers per hour above the speed limit for the next 20 minutes. The driver pulled onto a dirt road. We bounced up and down over the potholes. Dust from a van in front of us flew into my eyes. I put my Calvin Klein sunglasses on and kept the windows open. We parked in front of a side road dhaba under the shade of a lime tree. The crumbling brick building appeared dark on the inside. A dark man in a stained white shirt stood in front of a dirty showcase and read India Today. Another man at the back of the dhaba prodded burning wood in a three-sided clay stove with a black hollow rod. Steam puffed from the oversized steel pot on top of the stove. The dhaba had no electrical power, no generators, no fans. "Let's see what we can get to eat here," Baji said. "Right on," Gusharn said. Gusharn and Baji always thought about food first. The fiery sun blazed. We washed our faces and hands and feet under a manual water pump in the center of a concrete basin. The ground water cooled our skin. We drank tea and ate samosas. My mouth burned from the spicy samosas. Flies hovered around us. I hated flies. Baji laughed at us for swatting flies all the time. Baji did not care about flies. He had lived in India all his life. We finished eating. Baji and Gusharn left to find a washroom. Mom watched the corn in a nearby field sway in the hot early morning breeze. Mom loved cornfields. Her parents had many cornfields. "Let's get back to the car," Jazz said. When we got back, the driver and Rinku had screwed on a new license plate. PB15296 changed to an in-state MP16284 plate. "Why'd you guys do that?" Baji asked in Punjabi. This way, they will not charge us tolls because they will think we are a local vehicle, the driver said, dusting off his hands. The bastards at the toll booth always charge more when they see a vehicle from Punjab. Awesome, Gursharan said. Only in India, only in India. Jazz shook her head. Rinku wiped the dust-covered windshield with a wet rag and started the van to cool the engine. Everyone filed into the van from the only door on the passenger side. Rinku's seat moved forward, letting everyone get into the back. I walked slowly to the car and kept my salwar raised to knee height to avoid tracking dirt. I grabbed onto the door handle. How are you? He asked me in Punjabi. I pretended not to hear him. You have pretty eyes, he said. I did not look at him. I hoisted myself into the van and sat down on my favorite seat behind the driver. Rinku pushed his seat into position and sat down. A cloud of dust filled the air. I watched the dust settle onto the cassette holder. The tempo traveler lurched forward and back onto the GT road. We still had another 2 days of driving left. Rinku slid his silver ring on his bony middle finger up and down. He watched me through the left side mirror. I switched seats with Mom and fell asleep on the back bench seat.
That was A Long Drive, written and read by Raj Pabla. Pabla's next story is called Bananas and Beggars. Let's hear that one now.
Bananas and Beggars by Raj Pabla. I stepped out of the cool stone temple and into the midday sun. I touched the white marble stair at the foot of the temple and touched my forehead. The stair, directly under the sun, burned my hand. I hurried down the marble path and onto a tattered beige carpet. The hot marble burned my feet. At the side of the temple, women in faded saris squatted as they washed the marble with cold water from the Godavari River. A border of wetness lined the bottoms of the women's saris, and a bundle of dried bamboo strips tied at one end served as a broom to sweep away the extra water on the marble. The Godavari ran behind the rows of temples we had visited and weaved through the rest of Nandid, a small city to the south of Bombay. Under a canopy of dense tamarind leaves, my older sister Jazz and my younger brother Gursharan took turns videotaping and gulping Ganga mineral water from a 2-liter bottle. In front of the main gate to the temple grounds, Dad and my cousin Baji read a plaque explaining the historical significance of the temple. I had to get used to calling my older male cousins Baji, because it's respectful, and in India, respect matters. Mom, already outside the gate, glared at us. We have so many other temples to visit, Mom said. It will take us 3 weeks at the rate you people move. Jazz and Gursharan pretended not to hear Mom. Mom always rushed us. Mom had no interest in art and history. I slid into my black single-strapped sandals, relieved to get my feet off of the searing marble. I joined Dad and Baji. I read the Punjabi letters etched onto the brass plating. Gurdwara Hira Ghat, I read. I hated reading Punjabi signs, but I wanted to know the history behind every place we visited. I had not practiced Punjabi since junior high. Give up, Jazz said. Jazz jabbed my shoulder with the bottom of the half-filled water bottle. You suck. Screw off. I continued reading the plaque. The Gurdwara had been built over the location where the 10th Guru, Guru Gobind Singh, had rested during his last days. Let's go, Gursharan said. Mom's getting all pissed off because we're taking so damn long. We left the temple grounds and stepped out onto the dirt path. The sweltering heat from the scorching South Indian sun had not fully dried the sand path soaked by early morning rains. A few patches of wet sand speckled the path. The path, too narrow for cars and rickshaws, curved around a 500-year-old acacia where Guru Gobind Singh had preached over 300 years ago. A green mesh fence encircled the tree and some of the chakars, kirpans, swords, and spears used by the 10th Guru. The weapons, returned by the British government in the 1960s, sat in a glass display case. The polished metal surfaces of the weapons gleamed. Broken banana tree leaves, twigs, old newspapers, small plastic scraps, and beggars littered the path. Temples lined both sides of the path. We had visited the temples on the east side. At the end of the path, a black wrought iron fence separated us from a shady banana grove. The tall trunks stretched skywards and the luscious green leaves swayed gently with the hot breeze and green bananas hung from trees in juicy clumps. In the banana grove, native women loaded straw baskets with freshly picked bananas to be sold in the bazaar. Their worn, darkened skin contrasted against the ruby red, emerald green, and royal blue patterns in their saris. Strange brass ornaments hung from the women's ears and hair. "The banana grove reminds me of my dad's mango grove in our village when I was young," Mom said. "We used to steal mangoes when he fell asleep." Several women emerged onto the path from around the corner and headed toward the bazaar with worn-out straw baskets loaded with bananas hoisted over their heads. "Mataji, baran ke le lelo, sirf 4 rupaya," a woman said to Mom in a South Indian Hindi dialect. The woman wanted us to buy a dozen bananas for 4 rupees. Mom made her agree to 15 bananas for the same price. "Mom, who's gonna eat these bananas anyways?" "No one likes them," Jazz said. Mom ignored Jazz and handed a clump of bananas to me. We walked along the narrow path. We walked around a construction site to get to the next temple. Jazz, Gursharan, Dad, and Paji stood in the shade of a sandalwood tree and passed the water bottle around. Mom and I lagged behind. Beggars lined the side of the path and clanked coins in rusted tin cans. Some lay motionless on the dirt path, moving only their eyes. The sun beat down onto their bare backs. A thin layer of dark skin stretched over their protruding ribs. The beggars' tattered dhotis covered their dark, bony legs. Mom broke off a banana from the bunch in her hand and handed it to a beggar. The beggar's eyes lit up. "Bless you," he said. One beggar, with a missing arm and only small stumps for legs, sat on an old potato sack. Sweat glistened on his dust-covered face, and broken twigs poked out from his greasy black hair. "Ek paisa dena bhai," the beggar said. He asked passers-by for spare change. I handed a banana to him. "Why are you giving us bananas?" he asked. His Hindi turned harsh. "We do not want your bananas. Give us money. How are we supposed to live off of bananas? Don't you have any paisi to give?" "If you don't want it, don't take it. There are many others who will be happy to have it," Mom said. I snatched the banana back. "If you want money, don't beg for it then. Go earn it," I said. "Today's beggars are spoiled. They do not deserve anyone's mercy," an onlooker said in Hindi. I handed the banana to the next beggar, squatting 4 meters away. He accepted the banana with both hands and put his folded hands to his forehead, looking at Mom, then me, and then at the temple. His lips quivered and his eyes glazed with a film of tears. "Bahut bahut shukriya," he said. "May God give you long and prosperous lives." He peeled the banana and stuffed it into his mouth. I smiled. I forgot about the legless beggar, and I handed out the rest of the bananas. "Everyone else is already inside the Gurdwara," Mom said. "Okay, okay." I touched the white limestone threshold into the temple grounds and raised my hand to my forehead as I entered.
That was Raj Pabla reading her story, Bananas and Beggars. Pabla's last story is titled Saturday Morning at McDonald's.
Saturday Morning at McDonald's by Raj Pabla. I pulled into the McDonald's parking lot at 5 a.m. I pushed the black gear handle into park, pulled the key out of the ignition, and turned off the headlights. I reached across the seat for my visor and got out of the car. Saturday morning lineups at McDonald's never ended. Few staff had enough experience to handle the rush on Saturday mornings. I did. I worked every Saturday morning from open to 3 p.m. I forced my eyes open as I dragged my feet around the black wrought iron fence to the front of the restaurant. I pressed the buzzer and waited on the brick patio in front of the glass door for Rob. Rob, the breakfast manager, opened with me every Saturday. Everyone liked Rob. Rob had dark brown hair and crooked teeth. Most of the girls who worked with us found Rob's height and build attractive. Rob's best friend AJ and I had been dating for the past few months. Rob unlocked the door and pushed it open. "Hey, Raj, Candace called in sick again, eh?" Rob said. "Oh yeah, tell me something new. Can you work in drive-thru today?" "Where in drive-thru?" "First window." "Okay, I guess." I hated working on first window. John and Jen could not handle taking orders and taking money at the same time. I had trained them in drive-thru just last weekend. I had no choice but to work on first window. I would be at the back of the restaurant by myself all morning taking orders and taking money. I counted my till and activated my register. I stood in my isolated station. I leaned against the brown bun racks and propped my foot onto a case of Coke. Sesame seeds lay scattered on the beige greasy tiles. Stacked boxes of Big Mac containers leaned against the far wall. Broken down cardboard boxes and clear leaky garbage bags formed a mound in front of the back door leading to the compactor. The overnight crew had not done their job. I wanted to sit, but the security camera above made me feel uncomfortable. The camera, like a pair of eyes in the drywall ceiling, watched my every move. All morning I took orders and received payment. I knew all the keys on the register. I looked at the clock on my register, 9:30 a.m. With sick calls on Saturday morning, I never got a break. My headset beeped nonstop. Like a machine, I took orders and received payment. "Hi, can I help you?" I asked every time the headset beeped. The bulky gray headset I wore weighed my head down. My head hurt. "I don't know yet. Can you give me a minute?" the customer said. "What a moron," I mumbled after deactivating the microphone on my headset. I hated when customers asked me to give them a minute. The line stayed backed up in drive-thru on Saturdays. The customer must have waited at least 5 minutes in line before coming to the speaker. She should have decided what she wanted while she waited in line. "Hello, hello, are you there?" the customer snapped, as though I had asked her to wait. "Yup, what can I get for you?" I asked. "Give me 2 bacon egg muffin combos." "What kind of drinks would you like with the combos?" I used the same lines for every customer. It made things go faster. I did not have to think. Everything became automatic. "What kind of drinks you got?" Everyone knew what drinks we served. McDonald's had the same drinks for as long as I could remember. "We have orange pop, orange juice, Coke, Sprite, root beer tea, coffee." "Okay, okay, I want orange pop." "Okay, sure." "No, make that orange juice. No, make that a Sprite and an orange pop." "Okay, so that's 2 bacon egg muffin combos, 1 with Sprite and 1 with orange pop." "Change the Sprite to a Coke and the orange pop back to an orange juice." I deleted her drinks and re-entered her new drinks into the register. She changed her drinks 3 more times. "What's wrong with these people?" John yelled from the pickup window at the front of the restaurant. "Can't they make their minds up about their drinks?" I re-entered drinks and John remade drinks. I looked up at the black and white computer monitor. The line of cars curled around the restaurant and stretched past the beer store. Some cars pulled out of line and drove away. Okay, your total comes to 7:59. Drive through to the first window, please, I said to the woman. The woman drove to my window. I made her wait while I took three orders. A thin woman glared at me through the closed drive-through window. Bright pink lipstick had been pasted onto her lips. Heavy black eyeliner covered her eyelids. Clumps of mascara clung to her eyelashes. The woman looked like a witch. She blew her car horn. I slid the window open partway. What is taking so long? She yelled. Every time I come here, the service is so damn slow. Sorry about that. Your total comes to 7:59. She took so long ordering, and she tried to make it look like my fault. You know, you shouldn't be working in drive-thru anyway. You're too slow. Who made you in charge of drive-thru anyways? I took another order. I knew I worked fast enough. I had worked for McDonald's for 4 years and had a shelf full of service awards at home. Oh yeah, next time, when you're taking an order, take it without the attitude. I'm sorry, I was just trying to clarify your drinks, that's all. I took her money and entered the amount into the register. Why don't you go back to your own country, huh? The woman said as she waved her middle finger at me. I slammed the register drawer closed. I used to hear comments like that in elementary school. All the white kids said that to me when I lived in Toronto. I pushed the window open all the way and leaned out. I dropped the woman's change into her outstretched hand. Why don't you just fuck right off? I said. Excuse me? Yeah, you heard me. You can't tell me to fuck off. I'm the customer. Who's the manager here? I'm gonna tell the manager you said that to me. And? I slammed the window shut. The woman drove to the pickup window. She told Rob what had happened. Have a nice day, he said, and slammed the window closed. She sped away. What a bitch, Rob mumbled. Rob asked me later if I had told her to fuck off. I said no.
That was Saturday Morning at McDonald's, written and read by Raj Pabla. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1355. Arnie Ackman recorded Raj Pabla reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbury. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.